Welcome to the Lifestyles Unlimited Real Estate Investor Radio Show, a real estate investment program. Listen and learn how to use real estate to build wealth and passive income streams for you and your family. We bring you experts every day to discuss and answer your questions on everything from single-family homes all the way up to 600-plus unit apartment complexes. And now, the Lifestyles Unlimited Real Estate Investor Radio Show.
Welcome to the show. My name is Al Gordon, and as always, we're working on your financial freedom. The question that seems to be on everybody's mind right now is whether or not the housing market is going to crash. Yeah, you've seen the articles. I see the articles. It's like every day I look at my news feeds and there is somebody making an argument that the current housing market is in a bubble. And then they try and explain why there's similarities to today's housing market that go all the way back to the housing market that we experienced around 2008. And then they make claims that those similarities are there based on some kind of metric that they're using to measure the economy. And I don't think they're right. I really don't think they're right. See, I think, and a lot of other people agree with me, that the housing market is pretty healthy. Now, it's experiencing increases in pricing. That's what's going on. There's a lack of qualified housing available for sale, and there's much more demand for that housing. I mean, I know this firsthand. I absolutely know this firsthand because one of the things that I've done was I sold my principal residence to harvest money out of that property, and we're going to buy a replacement residence. And all that had been laid out. Everything was on track until the appraisal came in for the property we were going to buy. See, that property was valued at, it was on the market for $735,000. The agent representing it felt that she had solid comps. Now, when I had my agent pull the comps, we didn't get close to 735, but I thought, okay, well, maybe the other agent knows something that I don't know. It's possible. It's very possible. So we wrote the offer subject to appraisal, meaning we'll pay you what the property appraises for. Now, we may come in with a little extra money if we think that it's worth it, but we want an appraiser to come out and qualify your value. Well, the appraiser came out and qualified value for that property, but it wasn't $735,000. It was $625,000. So the owners of that property, literally today, are moving out of that property, and we don't have a deal. Because I'm not willing to pay an extra $110,000. I don't believe that property is worth $735,000. I never thought the property was worth $735,000 to begin with, but I thought at least the number would come in closer, and then we could maybe negotiate the difference or something. Yeah, I mean, my wife liked the property a lot. Well, now the problem is the appraisal's in. Value wasn't established where the sellers thought it was going to be. And I'm waiting to hear from them. They're appealing the appraisal. Apparently, they're, you know, coming up with some kind of comps that will support a higher price. And we'll see how that turns out. But I don't see it happening. I really don't see it happening. I think what happened on this particular property was we had an agent that overvalued the property and convinced the sellers that the property was worth that. So as of today, I don't even know if the sellers of that property are willing to meet me at the appraisal price. Now, I haven't canceled that escrow. I haven't canceled that contract, although I've got the right to do so because that's the way I wrote the contract. I can walk at any time. So I'm literally giving them another 24 hours to see if they can support the pricing. Now, here's the challenge that I have. Everything that I have done has been to assist the sellers with getting their price and moving on with their lives. And the problem is they didn't get their price, and they're moving on with their lives. So I'm waiting to see what they're willing to do. I'm waiting to see what they come back with. But right now, that property is like on the back of our list. We're just kind of keeping it around because we're kind of curious to see what the sellers will do. But one of the things that we're finding, even though there are other properties on the market that meet our requirements for our personal residence, a lot of that property is not really great property. No, I mean, we're seeing the good, the bad, the ugly. We're seeing stuff that people are trying to get a high price for, but when you walk through the property and you realize, wow, everything is dated. If we're going to live here, we're going to have to modernize some things. You know, you start thinking, okay, it's $35,000 for a kitchen. It's another $30,000 for flooring. It's another $10,000 for the appliance packages and things you're going to do with the property. Next thing you know, you're paying full retail price for a property that really probably isn't worth it. But if it appraises, it appraises. See, that's the thing with appraisers. They will look at materials. They will look at certain things, and they'll make adjustments to your value. And I think that's where the sellers on my particular property are at. They think the appraiser missed some things, but I think the appraiser was spot on. As a matter of fact, when the seller's agent was trying to provide comparable sales, she chose comparable sales that were like 20 miles away. Well, an appraiser's not going to look at that. That doesn't meet the appraisal test. So there's a lot of craziness going on in the market. But here's the one thing I don't think is going to happen. I don't think we're in a bubble. I don't think the housing market is going to crash. I think that this is a good time to unload property that you don't want, but make sure you price it appropriately. And if you get more money for it than you thought you were going to get, hey, that's good for you. Because what happens when you dispose of that property, you actually have money in your hand and you could do something with it. When we come back from the break, we'll talk about some of those things you could do. Stick around.
The other thing I think people hear landlord or property owner, and they think of Donald Trump and other multi-billionaires that own real estate, and that's not who the vast majority of owners across the nation are. The typical owner of a rental property owns just a couple properties, and they're people just like me and you.
You can own single-family houses and apartments, too. We'll show you how. Register at LifestylesUnlimitedWorkshop.com. Join our national network of rental owners.
You can't be financially free if you're psychologically imprisoned by disabling belief systems.
Are you ready to break free from your disabling belief systems about money, real estate, retirement, and financial freedom? Then join us for Lifestyles Unlimited's live online free workshop. Learn the belief system that thousands of people like you have used to break free from corporate America and create the lives they have always wanted. Register at LifestylesUnlimitedFreeWorkshop.com.
Welcome back to the Lifestyles Unlimited Real Estate Investor Radio Show. It's time to turn up the volume and fine-tune your passive income plan so you can create the lifestyle you've always wanted.
Welcome back to the show. All right, so let me throw another stat out at you just to kind of give you an idea of what the market may be doing. According to National Association of Realtors, the number of unsold homes rose 3.3% from May to June. That means that properties are not being snatched up like in the first 48 hours. That's kind of what it means. It also means that there are some properties going on the market that are the sellers are asking really realistically more money for the property than the property is actually worth. And then when you have an appraisal, go out and, you know, determine what market value is, because that's how single family homes are evaluated. It's evaluated based on what similar properties in the area have sold for. That's what supports the pricing. So the challenge I had was the property didn't match up to what the property is really worth. okay, it is what it is. So maybe that house is going to be part of that, you know, 3.3% that will be unsold homes because they priced it incorrectly. So pricing your property is still very important. Even if you have a terrible property that you've tried to sell before, you've put it on the market, you valued it based on, you know, what the square footage price is, dollar per square foot, and you price it competitively, but the layout of the home isn't very functional. Maybe you have some deferred maintenance, things like that, which causes a buyer to pass on your property. So let me give you a little hint about the one thing that you have absolute control over that will make a huge difference in whether your property sells or not. You ready for it? It's price. Yeah, it's what you ask for the property. If you price the property correctly based on its overall condition and how it compares to properties that are in better condition, you just need to adjust your price. Somebody will come along and buy that property because all of a sudden you'll create value for them. But what I want to talk about is what you should do with that money if you do sell that property that maybe you've been holding on to that's not really doing anything for you. Because that property is potentially worth money. Yeah, it is. It's probably gone up in value since you bought it, even though the condition of the property may not be as pristine as when you acquired it. Not a problem. There is a price for everything. So what I want you to do is get rid of things that aren't doing anything for you. It could be property that you're unable to rent. It could be land that you own that maybe you're thinking about building your dream house on in 20 years. It could be the motorcycle in your garage that you paid all cash for. But ironically, 5 years later, the value of that motorcycle is not what you paid for it. It's a depreciating asset. Here's what I'm getting at. There is money that you have access to that's tied up in things. You'd be surprised how much money you probably have access to, and it really just boils down to you letting go of things that aren't really providing for you what you intended them to provide. I mean, think about that motorcycle in the garage. You bought that because you wanted to look cool riding the motorcycle, right? Or you just wanted to have the thrill of riding the motorcycle. Maybe put the wife on the back and you go spend a day out in the Texas sun roasting, but you're riding. And it's fun. But you have to take a day to do all of that, and maybe you only get to do that once a month. So what are you really getting out of that? That's my point. Since the founding of our country, real estate has accounted for over 70% of the millionaires in the United States. Yeah, that's a statistical fact. The other thing I want to share with you is that real estate assets have a tendency to double in value every 20 years. Yeah, it's faster in some places, it's slower in other places. But the key factor here is that real estate has the potential to increase in value over time. And historically, it does just that. Even when the market has dips like it did in 2008, the real estate market eventually recovered. And if you have a very good strategy for investing in real estate and you have a contingency plan for what happens if the market does devalue and maybe I can't sell the asset for what I'm projecting in the next 5 years, maybe I need to hold it for 7 years. As long as you have that game plan laid out, when you acquire that property, you will do everything you're supposed to do to breathe new life into it and to make it a great place for somebody to live. See, that's the secret to real estate investing. Yeah, because the secret is there really are no secrets. But if you want a secret, the secret is give people what they want at a price they can afford and choose the right people to go into a business relationship with, because you're going to be in a business relationship with the people that occupy that house for probably a year, because you're going to have them sign a one-year lease. And if they're great residents and they want to keep staying there, you'll have them sign another lease. And maybe you increase the rent. You know, it's a business decision. Here's the point I want to make. We make money with real estate in both up markets and down markets. Yeah, we don't care what direction the market is going in because we will adjust to make sure that we're acquiring the right assets and that we're operating our assets correctly. Because we have learned that as long as you have a good contingency plan, you can outlast what the market does. Now, I realize that that concept of making money in both up and down markets, it probably seems a little counterintuitive to you, but I'm here to tell you it's absolutely true. There's an old adage that buying real estate is all about, you know, location, location, location. You've heard that, right? And I don't disagree with that concept at all, but I believe that it goes even deeper than that. I think it's very important to understand timing. You heard me correctly, timing. And I'm not talking about timing the market or the concept of buying low and selling high. Okay, I mean, if you can pull that off, awesome. But what I'm talking about is setting yourself up during an up market to not only survive, but also to succeed in a down market. It's also about being prepared for any market. Yeah, any market. Because here's the thing. You and I, we can't control the markets. The markets are going to do what they're going to do. But when we understand what the markets are doing, we can adjust as necessary to get the returns that we need to achieve. To me, that's a better strategy than worrying about the future. When we come back from the break, I'm going to tell you there about the five ways every dollar that we invest in real estate makes you money.
Del Wamsley on the economy and politics.
What happens if the economy turns around and goes back down now the Democrats are in power, or inflation becomes rampant and all of a sudden it becomes very difficult to do business? I was listening to an economist the other day and he pulled out this chart of GDP. He said, look, here's what I want you to do. He said, tell me anywhere from 1950 to 2021 where the Democrats took power or where the Republicans took power. He said, point it out for me. And the truth of the matter is you can't tell.
If you're sitting on the sidelines waiting to see what the politicians are going to do, or waiting to see what the economy is going to do, if you're trying to predict the future, stop. Politicians and the economy have no bearing on your success or failure. Only you do. Register for the next live online free workshop. We'll unfold the map to retirement in 5 years or less, regardless of what's going on in the world. It's the same proven strategies we've been using for 30 years through every political party and economic cycle you can think of. Register at LifestylesUnlimitedWorkshop.com.
We're back with the Lifestyles Unlimited Real Estate Investor Radio Show. We're here to answer your questions and help you become financially free.
Welcome back to the show. All right, so the Urban Land Institute report that was published a little earlier this year suggests that housing starts, in other words, what a housing start is, that's when new construction goes into play. So you have home builders that are building homes, so therefore new inventory. They expect that housing starts will rise to their fastest pace since 2007. Yet, even with that occurring, it's still going to fall short of pent-up demand. Here's the way it works. What's available for you to buy? And I'm in that boat right now because I'm about ready to walk away from the deal that I thought I was going to buy, which is not an investment. It's a house to live in. Yeah, it's not an investment. I shouldn't even use the word deal because it's not really a deal. Now I'm looking for something else that might make better sense for me. And there's two places I can look. New homes, which I'm really not interested in a new home. Because the new homes are, you know, they tend to be built in the outer parts of the municipality. And there's a certain target area I want to live in. So new home production doesn't necessarily help me. So where do I turn? Used homes. Yeah. Yeah, the stuff that people are currently living in. They bought the house, they're living in the house, and now they're thinking about selling. That's where the inventory comes from. And a lot of people are afraid to sell right now, because they don't want to be in the situation that I'm in right now, which is I'm kind of homeless and I don't have a contract on a replacement home. So does that bother me? A little bit, but it's not that big of a deal because I've got a contingency plan in place so that if all my efforts to find a replacement home fail me, I got a backup plan. I've got time on my side. I don't have to be at a duty station. I don't have to be anywhere than where I want to be. So I'm looking in a very specific area for my replacement home. And there's a couple that are showing up that meet the bill, which is good for me. But I'm also finding that other people want to buy those properties too, so there's a little competition out there. Yeah, so we'll just see how this plays out. But what I really want to talk about is the five ways we make money in real estate. See, the property I'm trying to buy right now isn't an investment because it's not going to provide me something called cash flow. And cash flow of the five things that real estate can provide you as far as making money, cash flow is the most important one. It really is. And here's why. You will become financially independent as soon as your monthly net cash flow meets or exceeds all of your bills. You heard me correctly. Age has nothing to do with it. I mean, I retired at the age of 53 by that definition, mainly because I'd never been exposed to the concepts that I'm talking to you about today. Yeah, I'd never heard about all this. I never knew that real estate could pay you five different ways. We have members in their 20s and 30s that have achieved that result. Yeah, so it doesn't matter what age you start. What matters is that you start. And ironically, we also have members in their 60s and 70s that have done the exact same thing. The key is you have to get yourself educated. You have to understand there's a better way to accomplish the things that you want in life. That's the key right there. But a lot of you believe that stuffing money into your retirement account is the way to go. That's the plan you're working on, because that's a 30, 40, maybe 50-year plan. Keep saving money, get to a certain age, retire, live off that money, hope it doesn't run out. And I will tell you, that's a failed system. So let me give you an example of how maybe owning a 40-unit apartment community could positively impact your life. You interested? I know you are. All right, so let's say, and this is just an example, but let's say you have a 40-unit apartment community that you've acquired that is paying you rental income of $20,000 a month. Now, it doesn't mean that's $20,000 that goes in your pocket. That's the $20,000 of income that that property generates for you. Now, along with that, you're going to have certain expenses to operate that apartment community. And because you have learned how to properly leverage other people's money, you're going to have a mortgage note on that property too, which you're going to be responsible for meeting every month. So let's say all of those expenses to include the mortgages, let's say that's $15,000. Well, what's left over is your net cash flow. Yeah, $20,000 minus $15,000, that's $5,000 a month cash flow for you. That's the money you put in your pocket each and every month. And that's the money you use to pay your personal bills. If your bills are $4,000 a month and your passive income on a property that you invested in is $5,000 a month, here's the question. When do you have to go back to work? And the short answer is you don't. You go back to work if that's what you choose to do. And there's nothing wrong with it. I'm not telling you to stop working, especially if there's a benefit to you. We have a lot of Lifestyles Unlimited members that meet that objective of replacing their income, but they keep working because they realize that, okay, well, I'm still trading time for money, but I'm actually pretty good at what I'm doing, and I kind of enjoy it. Oh, and by the way, all the money that comes in is available for me to invest in other pieces of real estate. So it's a strategy to generate additional revenue so that you can buy more investment property. So here's how you would calculate the cash flow rate on that investment. Let's say you invested $400,000 into that apartment community. All right, $400,000 of hard-earned money that you've saved up your entire life. And I know those of you that are out there that have that money in those retirement accounts, because people join Lifestyles Unlimited and they have that amount of money. So I know you exist out there. If that property is paying you $5,000 a month, that tells me you're making $60,000 a year in cash flow. So simple math says you're getting a 15% cash on cash return on your investment. And that's just one of the ways that real estate investing performs for us. And here's the other thing I want to kind of tickle your brain with. So you're thinking, okay, I got a 15% cash on cash return in this property. I can't live on $60,000. Are you sure? Yeah, I make $100,000 in my job. All right. Well, there's another way that we make money in real estate, and it has to do with the tax advantages. You see, you're going to take depreciation write-offs on this property. And because it's a multifamily property, one of the strategies is cost segregation, meaning that you accelerate depreciation on certain individual items within the property, and that throws off more depreciation. And the whole point of depreciation is that depreciation, if everything is structured correctly, should offset the tax liability on that $60,000. Meaning if you're making $100,000 at your job and you're paying whatever your ordinary tax rate is, you're paying Social Security, you're paying Medicare, maybe where you live there's state and local taxes. When you take into consideration all those taxes that come out of your check, maybe you are living on $60,000 a year, and maybe this is the way for you to go. We come back from the break. We're going to talk about something called equity capture. Stick around.
We sold one of my wife's properties and actually did a 1031 exchange, and we bought three brand new builds in Fort Worth. So right now, collectively, we have three of her inherited properties and then three properties in Fort Worth that we've done through Lifestyles.
And you turn one property into three, tripling your cash flow.
Exactly.
Yep.
Well done.
Learn to increase your cash flow. Register for the workshop at lifestylesunlimitedworkshop.com.
Your challenge is that you don't believe you can be rich, is that you don't believe you can retire within 5 years. That's half of your challenge. And until you can come up with that belief system, until you can reconcile that in your mind, you won't be willing to take the steps necessary to get there. So you need to get in here and meet some people.
Join us for the next free workshop and meet the people at Lifestyles Unlimited that will share Del Walmsley's belief system and empower you to take the steps you need to be successful. Register at lifestylesunlimitedworkshop.com.
Welcome back to the Lifestyles Unlimited Real Estate Investor Radio Show. Now, let's get back to your map to financial freedom.
Welcome back to the show. All right, as promised, we're going to talk about something called equity capture. Now, many people that invest in real estate, they don't even understand this concept. They really don't. They think that you go out and you buy a property, you pay retail pricing, you fix it up if you need to, that money comes out of your pocket, and you put the property into service. I mean, that's one way to approach it, but that's not the right way to approach it. What you need to do is you need to buy a property in the wholesale value range, and then as you improve the property, you keep all your costs at wholesale levels so that when you finish, the property will appraise for a higher amount. So really what it is, it's the difference between the purchase price of a particular asset to include all related closing costs, and this number becomes your all-in amount. So that's one side of the equation. That's what we want to see you do. And then you have the appraiser come in that gives you true market value. So the difference between those two is the equity that you capture in the deal. So let me give you a brief example to explain how this works. So when you buy a distressed property, something that's, you know, has functional obsolescence, maybe there was a death in the family, there's a myriad of reasons why properties are considered distressed. And let's say for this example, we're not going to do a multifamily property, we'll just do a single family home. So you buy it and you rehab it, and your all-in cost, everything that you spent, is $80,000. After you complete the rehab, you have it appraised, and the appraiser determines that the fair market value for that property in the neighborhood is actually $100,000, and that's based on comparable sales. That's how single family is valued. So you have effectively captured $20,000 in equity on that property. You heard me correctly. You start off with $20,000 of equity. What this really is it's called an unrealized capital gain. And it immediately goes on your balance sheet as wealth because it's equity that you own in a property. And the lender is really going to love you because, you know, if you're all in for 80% and they've got like a 75% loan on the deal, first of all, you're only cash out of pocket around $5,000. And it gets even better. The lender is covering $75,000 of the deal. So let's talk about how you would calculate equity capture as a rate of return on your investment, because I know it's really simplistic, but I think we need to discuss it because you need to understand. So because you acquired the asset correctly, your total out-of-pocket expenses on this property was maybe $5,000. And since you captured $20,000 in equity, when you divide that by $5,000 you put into the deal, your rate of return is 400%. That is a really, really good number. So you actually have about $25,000 in equity in the home because you put $5,000 of your own money into the deal. But you've captured 4/5 of the total equity. So you paid money for some of the equity, but because of your ability to acquire and control your costs and understand what the real value of the property is, you didn't pay money for that additional equity. That is a really cool thing. Now, here's another way we make money in real estate. We call it principal pay down, because one of the things we want you to do is we want you to correctly leverage the property. In other words, there's a sweet spot for you to bring a lender in to the deal, and that lender is going to bring, you know, potentially 75%, maybe even 80% of the value of the home. And the lender does not participate in any equity growth. They don't. As a matter of fact, every month when you make your mortgage payment, you're going to be paying a portion of that note down. That's the way it works. So let's go back to the example I gave you. So you have a mortgage on that house for, let's go super conservative. Let's say, so maybe you've got a mortgage on that house of $75,000. So a simple mortgage analysis tells me that if you put, say, a 4% note on that house with a 30-year amortization, you're probably going to have a principal pay down amount of, maybe $1,400 per year, which means that each month when you make that note payment, you're gaining over $100 a month in additional equity in the property because you're paying down that mortgage. And when you pay a monthly mortgage payment, part of that will absolutely reduce the principal. That's how mortgages work. The other interesting thing is about amortized interest is that over time, the principal amount will actually increase. So every month, if you've got a fixed loan, in other words, a fixed mortgage rate, you're not dealing with adjustable stuff. Every month that you own that property and you make that fixed payment, more and more of that payment starts going towards principal. Yeah, that's how amortization schedules work. I guess we could calculate your rate of return on that deal. If you put $5,000 into it and you're making like a principal pay down of around $1,400 a month, I mean, you can calculate your return. That's pretty easy, right? Actually, a better number than probably what your financial advisor told you you could do in the stock market, regardless of what the stock market is doing. Now, another way we make money has to do with these markets. You know, like I started the show, I told you that the markets are doing what the markets are going to do. And I gave you my opinion as to what I think the health of the market is. And I think it's still a pretty healthy market. I think it's a little weird. I mean, things are definitely in a different place than I've ever seen them. But I think the market is healthy. So keep in mind, if you go back to the founding of this country, and depending on what date you choose, I'm going to go with 1776, because that's the number I like. Since that time, there is historical data that tells us that real estate tends to double in value every 20 years. So to do that, you need about a 3.5% increase averaged over the 30 years. So every year you would project a 3.5% growth based on what the value was at the start of the year. The reason it's not a flat 5% increase is that the value in subsequent years is based on prior year's value. Yeah, I know, tricky stuff. Math can be a little tricky. So sticking with that house example, if that house was worth $100,000 after you rehabbed it, and you held it for a year, and let's say it only went up 3%. I'm going to go even more conservative. I've got data in front of me that tells me that year-over-year pricing went up over 10% from July of this year based on July in the previous year. But I'm not going to use that data. I'm going to go with a real conservative number. And let's just say that property goes up 3%. So at the end of year one, that $100,000 property is now worth $103,000. So to calculate the rate of return on the first year of appreciation, all you do is you take that $5,000 that you put into that deal, and if the property goes up by $3,000. That's a 60% return based on market appreciation. And if you're going to hold that property for, say, 5 years, you can do the math to figure out where it's going to go. Now, I've already talked about the tax advantages of real estate, and I will tell you that is very, very significant. The fact that we are able to write off depreciation, that we're able to write off certain things, allows us to have paper losses on the property, which insulates the income streams that we make. Yeah, that's the way it works. That's why you want to have the right amount of leverage on the property, because at a certain point, the more cash you put into the deal, the more it negatively affects your rates of return. So you're going to get the better rates of return by putting the less money you can into the deal. By having the property valued correctly and understanding how the depreciation works, depending on what the asset is, all of that depreciation, as well as the other write-offs, will insulate your income streams. And then when you sell that property, there is something that occurs. The IRS says, okay, now we need to have some depreciation recapture, and maybe there's some capital gains that we're going to charge you. And we look at that and we go, okay, well, if we don't have enough depreciation built up to avoid that, we'll just do a 1031 exchange and defer it to the follow-on property. Yeah, it's the way it works. It's really a good thing. If you want to find out how we do it, go to lifestylesunlimitedworkshop.com. Sign up. Let's get you going.
Thank you for listening to the Lifestyles Unlimited Real Estate Investor Radio Show. Ready for more of the map? Visit lifestylesunlimited.com. Explore our videos and articles. Click on the radio tab to access past show podcasts. View the radio show schedule and listen to our best of radio shows. Want to continue the conversation? Follow Lifestyles Unlimited on Facebook today. Join us next time. And until then, remember, it's not the money, it's the lifestyle.
The information and opinions you hear on the Lifestyles Unlimited Real Estate Investor Radio Show are those of the hosts, guests, and callers and do not necessarily reflect the opinions of this station, its affiliates, its management, or advertisers. The Lifestyles Unlimited Real Estate Investor Radio Show is for entertainment purposes only. Please consult a professional regarding your personal investment needs. Nothing presented on the Lifestyles Unlimited Real Estate Investor Radio Show constitutes an endorsement, recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or security.